Why do we keep ending up in a situation where we have homes that are threatened by floods? Are we not learning the lessons that we need to learn when we go through one of these events? Do we just keep repeating our mistakes? Slobodan Simonovic is the Director of Engineering Studies with the Western's Institute for Catastrophic Loss Reduction and joins us on Ottawa Today. Good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
What are we getting wrong time after time when it comes to planning for floods and preventing them?
How much time do you have?
Quite a bit.
I think there are many things that we are really getting wrong. Probably one of the main messages is that the practice of preparing, responding, and addressing this kind of disastrous event is repeating itself. We experience the event, we clear and clean, we pay, and we don't change anything in order to prepare for the next event.
Right.
And there are a number of things that can be changed.
Okay, so let's talk about some of those. And I guess the first question I'm going to ask is maybe it's an obvious one, but why do we build on properties? Why do we build people's homes in places that are at risk of being flooded in the first place? Even if it's a once-in-a-century event or a once-in-50-years event, it's going to happen at some point. So why do we put homes there in the first place?
The answer to this question is actually in the existing regulations and the implementation or the enforcement of the regulations. Regulations are based on some kind of engineering or technical studies that are determining what land close to the river may be exposed to flooding or inundation. And then the regulation is being implemented in a sense of what can be done at that and that land. But the different levels of government who are regulating the land use are doing, they determine how far from the river and what can be done within that particular land.
Okay, so the regulations allow for it, but I guess why are we still doing it? Why do we build properties on floodplains? Should we stop?
I think that there is no way to continue with this practice. You're probably aware of the very high cost of flooding in the recent history in our country, and just going back to Calgary 2013, Toronto, 2013, 2005, Manitoba 2011, and so on. The kind of same message that we have too much of the value being exposed to the disastrous event, and something needs to change. Why are the regulators allowing use of the land? It's probably related to the way how the taxes are being collected. And I think the jurisdiction of the provinces is directly related to the decision what can be done and how the regulations can be enforced.
So going forward...
Going
forward, does that mean if there is a home that is damaged enough by a flood that it would have to be torn down and replaced, that what we should actually be doing is saying, okay, don't build there, build somewhere else, and let's leave that property vacant rather than rebuild another home on that property, which might then get flooded, destroyed, and have to be replaced again in the future?
Mark, that definitely makes sense. And I think that makes sense from multiple points of view, economic point of view, safety point of view, and so on. The question is who is, kind of making that decision and who is enforcing that. I think the regulations are there to kind of provide the background for implementing this type of decision. The question, why are these regulations not enforced, or why not enforced full power, is really the question for the politicians or the authorities who are implementing or enforcing these regulations.
Right.
The main message is we have to remove these properties from the places where they can be repeatedly exposed to further damage. many experiences. I mean, you have a Europe after 2000, which is actually eliminating or moving the cities 500-600 years old, so parts of the cities, simply to allow some space for the river. We cannot afford continuing and rebuilding at the same location.
One of the points that you've raised recently is the fact that today's floodplain is different from the floodplain of 50 years ago, that these things change, that that maps are not, you don't just lock in a map for a river and it's permanent. Things evolve. So we need to adapt our understanding of and our knowledge of where, of which areas are exposed to flooding.
Yes. Yes, there is a very significant impact of the globally changing conditions, which include the increase in population, change in the land use, as well as the change of the climatic conditions. And they all affect the kind of key input into this process that leads to flooding. They impact the precipitation. By impacting the precipitation, they're affecting the distribution of flows, and flows are determining basically the extent of inundation. So if we consider that we are living in a non-stationary world, that the kind of historical period cannot be used for the prediction of the future, we have to realize that decisions and determination of these floodplains or the areas under inundation is a dynamic phenomena. Is a phenomenon that's kind of affected by the change in these conditions that leads to inundation. So fixing the lines and determining or accepting that they are there forever is not acceptable anymore. We have to look at them in a kind of dynamic form and see how we can adapt in the best possible way to respond to these changing conditions.
All right, so a lot of what we've spoken about so far has to do with the location of houses and understanding where flooding is likely to occur. That's very big picture. At a more practical level, when the threat of a flood arises, do we respond too slowly? Because there are people asking now, why didn't we start sandbagging sooner? Why didn't we act more quickly?
There are a couple of possible reasons for that. I am, from the kind of personal experience, I can say that our system, or the Canadian system for responding to the disasters, is not the most efficient. We have this kind of hierarchical approach where the local and then the local governments are responsible at the first level when the capacity of the local government exceeds the extent of the disaster. We move to provincial level, from province to federal level, and so on. So you see in that hierarchy, almost every step requires some time. And sometimes the water and floods are moving pretty fast and not following the dynamics of that process. So in my opinion, there is an opportunity to improve and change that process when the prediction is provided that the flooding may occur. We have already set organization and the response path that can lead to most efficient response, primarily focusing on eliminating impacts on life and then minimizing the damage and shortening the recovery period to provide the conditions for people to come back to normal life.
All right. And you have suggested, I read an article where you were quoted, that if there are homes that are already built in zones that are prone to flooding, that we should actually, the government should buy those homes and move the people out of them and just stop building there. Should we be that extreme about it?
Correct. I don't think that's extreme, Mark. If you look at the common sense, if you look at the economics, in my opinion, this is one of the alternative solutions which are very effective and should be definitely compared to other potential alternatives. The fact that floods are natural phenomena which is repeating itself, so they will be coming back, and the flooding and inundation will be occurring in the future. We cannot eliminate them. Is the fact that the damage, if the property or the particular piece of infrastructure is exposed to this flooding, and the damage will be cumulative. it will be repeating and adding over time. Therefore, trying actually to eliminate that is a very sound solution. We have examples all over the world where the so-called the managed retreat or buyouts are being considered to be very effective solutions. I lived through the 1997 flood of the Red River. At that time, I was in Winnipeg and worked after that with the International Joint Commission. And if you recall, in the U.S. part of the Red River was the city of Grand Forks, 55,000 people, city fully inundated. And the whole old part of downtown was, after the flood, bought by the government. People moved to new locations, and the whole area converted into a big and nice PGA golf course, which is currently being used with these people. And the damage, the potential future damage, completely eliminated.
Fascinating stuff. It's great to hear your perspective on this. Thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you very much.
Slobodan Simonovic is a director of engineering studies with Western's Institute for Catastrophic Loss Reduction, asking a lot of good questions and making a lot of great suggestions about why we don't learn from previous flood incidents.